Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio broadcasts from two shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. We Dig Plants is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. We are Groundworks, Inc. I am Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. We have two local guests today from Park Slope, Brooklyn. We have Kim Mayer and Claudia Joseph from the Old Stone House, which is a really great historic site. And they're going to talk about the history of the house and the garden and just tell us a little bit about what Brooklyn used to be like when it was a farmland. The story of this house is very intimately involved with a very important revolutionary battle, and it was really center stage for the face of an extremely bloody massacre. But we're going to talk today about the original mission of the house and Dutch life in the mid to late 1600s. The house was built in 1699 by a Dutch immigrant, Claus Arendsen, is that right?
Claus Arendsen Vechte.
Vechte, okay. And it sits, the house is located in Park Slope at 5th Avenue and 3rd Street. And at the time, the house was located within the old town of Brooklyn, if I'm pronouncing that.
Brooklyn.
Broken land.
That's how my ancestors pronounced it. Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
They weren't Dutch, though.
This area of Brooklyn was founded by the Dutch, and it was under English control at that time until the late 17th century. So welcome, Kim and Claudia. Thank you for joining us.
It's really fun to be here. Great adventure today.
Yes. snowy day. So Kim is the executive director of the house, and Claudia is the gardener extraordinaire. I visited this house. I first got familiar with this house, although I live very close to it. But I visited this past October, and I was so excited. I went with my friend Tricia, who's a landscape architect for the Parks Department. She's actually redesigning the park where the house sits. And when we approached the house, there was an exhibit and an event going on called Farm City, Brooklyn Utopias. So, of course, I was so excited because here's all my worlds colliding. This exhibit is an annual exhibit and an event series founded in 2009 by Catherine Grissel, in which artists consider differing visions of an ideal city through the concrete example of Brooklyn. Farm City is a broad-based, long-term action research project launched by Derek Denkla that aims to engage public enthusiasm for environmental change through collaborations between arts and urban agriculture. So as I entered into this event and this house, I walked through the split rail fence. I see the lab bean. So there's this like farm event going on. There's this historic house that Carmen and I just are always spending time talking about these Dutch farmhouses and what Brooklyn used to be like. So we're really excited to have you guys here. So one quick thing about the lab bean, and then I'm going to start talking with you guys. So I walk up to the house and I see this lab bean, this beautiful purple bean kind of spiraling up the mailbox, and I zone in because I'm like, oh my God, look at this, you know, it's so beautiful. And to me, it's really the symbol of elegant gardening. It's reminiscent of Thomas Jefferson's vegetable garden. And I knew I was in a good place because here's the symbol, and this interplay of house and history and elegance.
And it's not a Parks Department building. It's a real...
No, it's a Parks Department building.
But I mean,
we'll
not
get to that.
It's not your typical Parks Department building.
No.
No offense to the Olmsted brothers. but it was not a park. It was a functioning... That's what's so fascinating to me about it. It was a functioning farmhouse. And I love to hear, I'd love to hear about that. I love that there's still one left, you know, a few left in Brooklyn, actually. Yeah.
So Kim and Claudia, tell us about the house and the garden and what was life like when it was truly a farmhouse and not a Parks Department building. In a nutshell, go.
Well, it is still a Parks Department building. Yeah. The building that's there now is actually a Robert Moses building, mm-hmm. and it was built in the 1930s during Moses's sort of reign of creating public
that's
recreation.
That's a good word.
yeah. And but the house is very reminiscent of the original building. It's looks somewhat like an Amsterdam townhouse, mm-hmm. long and narrow. It's about 100 feet from its original location. The exterior of the building is built with the original stones. Mm-hmm. So you have these great sort of tumbled boulders and really great brickwork under the eaves and this wrought iron 1699 that creates the roof supports when you look at the ends of the building. And the Vecta family, when they built the house, put it in a great location. It was at the intersection of the Port and Gowanus Roads, uh-huh. The main east-west and north-south roads at the time. The Port Road was more or less where First Street is. And the Gowanus Road ran parallel pretty much to 3rd and 5th Avenues. Mm-hmm. And it was right along the shores of the Gowanus Creek, which was an incredibly rich estuary area. You know, no Superfund site there.
No, not yet.
And it was an amazing place to have a farm, about 125 acres, I think, Claudia. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what were they farming? What was the dominant?
Well,
was it a family?
It was a family farm.
Okay.
The Vecs had about three generations of family living together in the house. They had some indentured servants. They had slaves.
Uh-huh.
Brooklyn was a very large slaveholding community because mm-hmm. it was the agricultural breadbasket of the area. It was
right.
really a rich
yeah.
agricultural
we
area.
We always talk about that.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing to think that hidden underneath this extreme urban environment was this very, very rich, beautiful farmland, really peopled by 270 families
uh-huh.
That created this amazing resource. But in terms of what they actually grew, we don't have a lot of primary source documentation, but maybe Claudia will talk a little bit about colonial planting and the kinds of things you might have found on site.
I believe all the colonists at the early time that sheep shepherd keeping was very popular to keep
uh-huh.
sheep, and that was a primary need for clothing, and that flax also
uh-huh.
was a primary crop that they had to have
uh-huh.
For their everyday life. I believe corn was introduced very early,
uh-huh.
and they had to have all their medicinal cabinet. They must have foraged the native plants in the area
mm-hmm.
and also brought with them many of their well-loved plants from home.
Yeah. When I visited, I saw you had the Three Sisters display going on.
Yes,
yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
We try to keep that history moving forward.
Well,
that's a good combination for a number of reasons. They used
sure.
it because it's very effective and supplies all of their dietary needs, while the plants also are working very well together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we also know the Vex had a pear orchard, because on the gruesome side, a few years later, one of the Cortellius committed suicide by hanging himself from one of the pear trees.
Oh, I
on
didn't
their
know
property.
That story.
Wow. On their property. Yeah, you know, life was hard.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
one of those stories that comes down through us that actually is documented, unlike so much of their life.
Ooh. Yeah.
So.
Well, I always wonder about what our area would have been like if it had remained Dutch and New Amsterdam instead of becoming English, you know, because the Dutch had such a great horticultural and gardening culture and history, you know?
It's an interesting question. We might have had more gardens, but I think business would have been the driver. The
mm-hmm.
Dutch were very
yeah.
good business people. The Vex had set up a series of canals to get themselves into market. It was
yeah.
really their primary motivator to be so close to the shore.
I read a quote once where it was exactly about that, Carmen. They were talking about if the Dutch had stayed here and continued, you know, their kind of reign, we wouldn't have died from so many diseases because they were much better farmers than the English were. And they were more prepared to come to a farming or a land where they could farm rather than the English, who just kind of came here more for religious purposes.
But in New York, you know, the Dutch were in charge. And I think mm-hmm. that what made it difficult, particularly after the Revolutionary War, is that the entire area was completely denuded. The British really just took it back to nothing to right. take all of the resources they could from the New York area all the way out to Long Island.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, that would be a good exhibit at some point, too.
Yes. Putting it out there.
Yeah.
We have a temporary space upstairs at the old stone house.
Exactly. So how does the work of the garden, Claudia, aid in the educational mission of the house?
The educational mission is very much based on inquiry and learning with hands-on experience. Mm-hmm. So the gardens are a fabulous tool for people to explore the history directly.
Uh-huh.
The children, we have a second grade program uh-huh. where the children are turned loose in the landscape to find the medicinal plants that the colonists would have used.
Uh-huh.
And it's really a moment of joy when mm-hmm. they go out on their scavenger hunt. And they're very excited when they find the plants and draw them and connect with them, that they're developing a relationship with the landscape, which I think is very important at that age.
Yeah, and for city kids.
To be connected yeah. and not think of plants as just something that fills a space.
Exactly.
They have a function, we have a relationship, and there's a benefit.
And it really operates on two levels. You know, we're educating children, but we're also educating adults.
Mm-hmm.
And Claudia has a few programs coming up that really get at that adult education aspect of it.
Yeah, tell us about those.
Good. I teach a field called permaculture,
uh-huh.
which is an environmental field design, and it is a whole systems study.
And you actually worked with Alice Waters, is that right?
I worked with her out in California a little bit.
Yeah.
I did go to the Edible Schoolyard,
uh-huh.
and that was a wonderful learning experience to have 2 acres with children running loose.
Yeah.
It was really exciting. And the job I did there was to install a creek bed, actually. So that's a permaculture thing where you get out your A-frame and you find where the contour of the land is and you look at the flow and can do something
uh-huh.
Like that to make a ditch that retains water. So
are you able to do that with regard to the Gowanus and where you're located on site?
Well, in the education that I do, we look at the entire watershed
mm-hmm.
and we look at the way water is held in the land. The goal is to capture all of the water. Modern engineering teaches us to direct the water off the property,
mm-hmm.
but historical farming teaches us to keep
the water
on yes. the property.
You don't
right?
want to pay for it.
So we don't want it going down the sewer and out into
right.
the Gowanus, right?
right.
So
right.
we're trying to keep every drop of water we can. And we do that with the contour of the garden, that it's not linear-based gardening, which is not very Dutch. We do have some Dutch gardens that are very linear.
Mm-hmm.
And then the farm garden is a more naturalized series of beds that helps keep the water in the slope, so
right.
we don't lose it.
Right.
And we do a variety of educating with the permaculture. It's all about our systems, our major systems that support us, shelter, economic systems, social systems, barter, medicine, health, food.
Mm-hmm.
Food is the big one.
Food,
we
right.
love food.
Yeah.
And there's a big emphasis on growing and preserving food.
Mm-hmm.
And relation to our community, that how do we make all this work, especially during the times, you know, that we're experiencing. So
history can teach us a lot of lessons. That's what's so great about what you all are doing, because it doesn't have to remain in the history. It is very applicable for the future.
Right. It's not static. And as a public history site, permaculture is really something that gives the most important contemporary view into the way people lived in the past.
Exactly.
For most of our human history.
Yeah.
You know, and what I like about education in context is obviously the Brooklyn Botanic Garden has lots of children's education, but it's a very different kind of institution. I think in some ways this house, it can make it much more personal. You can really talk about a family and how they lived. Last fall, I took my son to Colonial Williamsburg, and that's, of course, like on a grand scale.
The Rockefellers can do so many.
Yeah, when you have that much money. Yeah. But it was very interesting. You know, he, of course, is studying history. He's in junior high, but to live it. You know, one of the things that I had him do was they have various programs, and one of the things was you join a regiment and you march in it. And, you know, you can talk all about what it's like to be a soldier in the Revolutionary War and what it's, but to actually have to stand out there in the cold for 2 hours and follow orders, it was a very different experience. I think he got a lot more out of it than he would have, you know, reading about it. You know,
it's true. My mom was always happy to point out that I lived at Plymouth Plantation for a week when I was in junior high school. And as much as I hated it, it's obviously colored my world.
Yes.
Here you are.
So who knows? Maybe there's hope for Max.
Well, we have to take a break and we'll be right back. Hang on. Welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants and the Heritage Radio Network. That was a little hip-hop Brooklyn Dutch music. It's called Original Dutch Sound. Thought it might be appropriate.
That's really good, Alice. Appropriate, since we're talking with Kim Meyer and Claudia Joseph about the old stone house in Brooklyn and the days of Brooklyn as a farming community. I want to talk a little bit about the actual Battle Week and how the house and gardens must have been ruined during that period, how the land and hope suffer at the sake of democracy. Tell me a little bit about what happened, historically speaking, to the land then.
Sure. The Battle of Brooklyn, sometimes known as the Battle of Long Island, took place on August 27, 1776. It was the first official battle fought by the United States Army, and it was over in 6 hours.
Wow.
British, yeah, amazing and very bloody. The British had come to New York thinking that they would quell the rebellion within 5 days. But due to weather and perhaps the Howe brothers' reticence to actually really take a stand, the Americans were able to pull themselves together and escape across the East River and go on to finish fighting a war that the British never thought that they would be engaged in for 7 years.
Right.
So the house was really the nadir of the battle. If you look at a map, you can see that the British landed out by the Verrazano. Cornwallis and Grant went around to Bedford with the bulk of the army. Howe came along the Gowanus Road, and then there was another series of regiments that came down from Prospect Park, and those three groupings of soldiers ended up at the house. So there was this enormous skirmish, like 3,000 soldiers against 400 Americans,
right,
who were led by a general named William Alexander, who called himself Lord Stirling. He's a whole other story. He's right. A really great character. But the landscape around the house was seriously disturbed. Our knowledge is that the Vex were living there at the time of the battle. Who knows where they were actually during the battle itself. But they went on to continue farming the landscape, but sold the house to the Cortelyou family in 1778.
Okay.
one of the great mysteries is what happened to all of the dead, the Maryland right. soldiers that
that were sacrificed.
Launched themselves
yeah.
into the sacrifice. And so there are a couple of different theories. One is that they're buried in a specific burial spot on 3rd Avenue between 7th and 8th Streets that's identified on what's called the Fields Map, with an oval meant to create a more permanent memorial. And then there's the other theory that the British had a tendency to bury traitors where they lay. And so it may very well be that the remains of the battle really exist under the Staples on 4th Avenue.
Uh-huh. Oh my God. I grew up as a kid touring Civil War battlefields. I lived in Virginia and my father took me. We lived very near to the Shenandoah Valley and I was at Gettysburg and the Battle of Vicksburg and I was all up and down that learning, you know, and recreating. My father was one of those like recreationist Civil War
reenactor.
No, he wasn't that.
He wasn't.
That
he didn't dress up.
Nutty,
no.
but we certainly had the tours and the books and the like. No, we're going, and you're going to stand in this field and imagine what it's like. And I used to have nightmares. I would come home from these battlefields, and I always wanted to go. And my mom was like, "You stop," you know, because I would stand in this field, and I would think, "This used to be a farm." And now there's spirits here, you know? And that's what I kind of felt like when I walked into the stone house. But then I saw that lab bean and I knew I was in good company and things are growing and thriving,
yeah,
you know?
And it's really part of the continuum. The house has been at the center of Brooklyn history since 1699. And so everything that ebbs and flows in the environment has happened around it from, you know, the original settlement to the battle to industrialization, because it's so close to the Gowanus, which was one of the greatest industrial sites in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
It was central to Edwin Litchfield's development plans for Park Slope.
Right.
The reason the house was buried, the original house was buried, is because Litchfield used it as a fill site when he was developing what we know today as Brownstone Park Slope.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Actually, Carmen's husband has a great joke about the Gowanus in its current state. He calls it the Don't Gowanus.
Yeah, he's renamed a lot of the city. That's part of it.
I don't know, the Salt and Battery Tunnel. The Dredgers would be really bummed about the Don't Gowanus part, though.
Yeah.
Right. How we reclaim it. I have to mention that the house did not have that beautiful garden, and we started in 2005.
Uh-huh. Claudia and I started at the same time,
when Kim came to the house. I caught word through the grapevine. I was community gardening at the Garden of Union on Union
mm-hmm.
Street.
Right, a great garden.
I continue. And that's the mother garden.
Yeah.
That one garden makes another, you know.
Exactly.
That's the great thing about gardening is we can share.
Uh-huh.
And
it's
a great community and lots of energy comes to support a new site. But I heard word that Kim wanted a garden and I had gone many times because I live two blocks away. I had gone with my little girl and thought, oh, what a shame. Because I grew up in Virginia. In Virginia, if there's a historic house, it's in a
those
setting.
Those ladies are taking it.
You would not find a blank.
No.
So finding a blank was quite a mystery to me when I first came to New York to see this wonderful little house and no context. So for 5 years, we've been creating context for the house, and it's been quite an adventure and really fun because Kim is such a great director.
Yeah.
And Claudia is a really knowledgeable gardener, and just it's created a more evocative space, which I think for a history site, you really need to be able to see what might have been.
Exactly.
And that wasn't possible before. And with Trish's work on the park renovation, it's going to take us to another step. I mean, we'll still be a historic site in the middle of a really great, intense recreation area, but we'll have much better garden sites, and all of the brick and chain link fence that's been there since the 1930s is going to go away. And
I heard you guys are putting in a traditional split rail.
Great.
That's astounding.
It's very un-New York City parks and parks.
Yay, Trish.
But actually the post and rail came because Claudia started that. We had a sort of an unprotected area on the South Garden, which used to be a dog run, which is one of the great, amazing transformations. And so we took out the chain link that was there. And Claudia, in one of her first permaculture classes, did yeoman's work putting in a split rail, because you can imagine when you're digging down in New York City urban area. Well, yeah. We all know that. What do you find?
What do you find? Hopefully you don't find any of those soldiers, but you never know.
Not far enough. You have to go down about 15 feet, I think.
So, Claudia, tell us some things that you grow that you love in the garden.
Oh, boy. There's so many great things to grow here. There are a lot of wonderful berries that we grow that are native, because the usefulness of the landscape is based on food, medicine, craft, and wildlife habitat. So I love winterberry. I love snowberry, Juneberry, you know, all the berry yielding natives are wonderful landscape plants because of their resilience and their performance.
Right.
Yeah, and they're offering a form, a history, and a habitat that our hope is that instead of blackbirds and starlings and pigeons and sparrows, that we'll have real birds. And we have started getting woodpeckers and kinglets and the occasional wood thrush during migration. And it's really lovely, and I think fun for everyone to see a pretty little songbird in the landscape. So that's one of the themes behind our foundation plantings.
Okay. And then what about for the future? Are you going to ever, would you ever want to do like a traditional kitchen garden, or is that too kind of planned and programmatic?
No, we have many, many aspects of the kitchen garden in place already. We have dozens of herbs for culinary and medicinal use. And, you know, in the new garden, we had we just got the big space that actually had sun, so vegetable production went up quite a bit this year. We had a lot of cabbage, kale, collards, beans. We had a little Three Sisters thing going on, some canteen gourds, you know, useful items that maybe are a little different than what you see in a standard food garden, but not that far off.
Because it is about utility, so those gourds and, you know, everything is used, every single part and parcel of the land is used.
And we have a great project coming up starting this spring with Brooklyn School of Inquiry that's going to be a really focused Three Sisters gardening project, and the kids are going to come work on the site, and we'll probably do some maintenance over the summer, and they'll continue in the fall to come back for the harvest. So our goal is to create an ever more sort of engaged garden program at the house. The school gardening movement is so strong right now, and so many people are interested in it, but not every school is able to have a garden on site. And so we feel like our role is really to provide a space where teachers can come with their class and have that hands-on experience at the house. And Claudia's made that possible.
And we're having a lovely event for teachers on February 12th. UFT Educating Tomorrow Division is going to be bringing some teachers in, and we'll be working with them to help facilitate their planning for school gardens, that many teachers would like to garden with the children but don't have the experience and they're intimidated, and we would like to do offer that outreach and help them make it possible and have them feel comfortable and happy.
And see the resources.
That extra workload.
That's
really good. I'd like to send some. I'm trying to start a project at my son's junior high. They have an actual greenhouse, an education-sized greenhouse on site. He's at Bay Academy in Sheepshead Bay, and it's very difficult. One of my frustrations is they say they want to do it, but then they never really can commit to the time, and it's such a huge bureaucratic process to go through all the layers, you know, to just do something as simple as start seeds, you know.
That's a whole other conversation.
So I might need you, Claudia, to come down.
Absolutely.
Help cut through that red tape.
I love encouraging staff to, you know, just take it on. Once the structure is there, it is not so hard.
No, and they have the space. Program. Like you were saying, it's very rare that a school has the space to have. They have a whole courtyard with raised beds that could be food gardens. The greenhouse can be, you know, the place to start things. But they just don't have, it's sort of not organized. And they're also, as you were saying, afraid of taking on too much more because they're already so overwhelmed with work, you know.
It really has to fit into the curriculum. And I think the way that the Department of Education has the system set up. It's so testing-based, especially in middle school. It makes it very challenging to get out of the classroom and to do things that are sort of off the standard curriculum. So right. anything we can do to help with that, and I think the more support the teachers have to do that,
exactly,
the happier everyone will be.
Yeah, so. And that's what's so important about community. And, you know, that's why we wanted to have you on the station and to get the message out for what you all are doing at the house. And it's really a beautiful, great little site in Park Slope, Brooklyn, and I really encourage everyone to come out.
Yeah, I don't think enough people know about it because, you know, yeah. it seems, like I said, like a more typical park, you know, and I don't think people yeah. realize the historic importance of what happened there and also what's happening now and what's going to happen in the future.
Well, I think that's actually a great end to, or note to kind of end on, because there is this master plan for redesign. Can you talk a bit about that? And then, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap things up, but let's just talk about what the landscape and house is going to evolve into.
Sure. The Stone House is part of the Historic House Trust of New York City, and we have a great relationship with Brooklyn Parks. We're really fortunate in that they've just been very open to the kind of work that we've been trying to do the last 6 years. It's been open to the public since 1997, but we're finally at a point institutionally where we have a board that's very visionary and forward-thinking, and support from Parks, and really good expertise available to us through Claudia. And we had gotten some funding from the J.M. Kaplan Fund to do a set of community listening sessions and come up with a new renovation plan for the park. And so it takes quite a bit of time from uh-huh. the beginning of the idea to the actual fruition of the plan.
Yeah.
But we expect by spring, early summer of 2012, that we'll have this beautiful new playground area with one main path leading to the house, some interpretation out on the site, and it'll Great. Just be an even more thriving community space than it's been. And it'll let us do the kind of public history programming that we've wanted to do for so long and really haven't been able to do.
Right, right. And I overheard you and Trish talking about some trees. Are there going to be some special trees, I guess, from the history of the land?
I think we're talking about putting in some...
She went with some natives.
Some natives.
Staghorn sumac. And
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And I think a lot of blueberry.
Great.
The Ooh. Bush blueberry.
Great.
Right. So she's continuing the useful theme, which is Good. Really great that... we got on the same page with Parks Department.
Yeah, that's really it's nice. A great union. It's a really great union. So, well, thank you all for joining us
thank
and telling us
having.
About the house and the gardens. And everybody, please go visit the Old Stone House in Park Slope, 5th Avenue and 3rd Street in the J.J. Byrne Park.
Washington Park and J.J. Byrne Playground.
Okay.
We have all our events on our website, theoldstonehouse.org.
We're going to post a link, exactly.
Great. Thank you so much.
So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to We Dig Plants.
Heritage
See you
Radio
in the garden.
Network. Thanks.